This is 89.1 GLT and WGLT.org, Bloomington Normal's public media. I'm Mike McCurdy. It's Sound Ideas. The Me Too movement might be missing the bulk of workplace harassment against women. The National Academies of Science, Engineering, and Medicine has released a report on sexual harassment of women in academia. Mary Cullen has the Central Illinois connection to this story.
The Academy's report, titled Sexual Harassment of Women, Climate, Culture, and Consequences in Academic Sciences, Engineering, and Medicine, took over 2 years and was completed by a committee of more than 20 experts. One of those experts is Illinois State University Distinguished Professor of Psychology, John Pryor. Pryor says the report puts sexual harassment into a broader context, reaching beyond the typical stories that we see coming out of the Me Too movement.
People who studied sexual harassment, as I have for more than 30 years, know that sexual harassment is something that has been pervasive in the experiences of working women as well as women in academic context. So it's nothing new to researchers to think that there are many women who've experienced sexual harassment.
The study addresses three forms of sexual harassment: gender harassment, unwanted sexual attention, and sexual coercion. Can you explain these?
Using scientific sampling methods, and we have found that the kind of thing that happens most commonly to women with regard to sexual harassment is this first thing you mentioned, gender harassment. One of the things important to understand about gender harassment is that it's something that is different from some of these experiences that are described by women in the Me Too movement and some very high-profile kinds of cases that are very prominent in the media. Essentially, gender harassment is sexist behavior. It's a put-down of women. It involves sexist hostility, like saying that women don't belong in a particular field or profession, or that they somehow are inferior to men, or ostracizing women in some sort of way. It can also involve crude behavior, making crude jokes or crude comments about people with regard to their appearance. Another thing important to point out is that these are not really sexual behaviors. They're sexist behaviors. There are other forms of sexual harassment, unwanted sexual attention, and sexual coercion that are sexual behaviors. Unwanted sexual attention, an example of that would be repeated requests for a date and being turned down each time and continuing to do it. And sexual coercion is something that is something involves some sort of power that someone has over someone. So it would, for example, involve some sort of threat or potential bribe to try to get somebody to be sexually cooperative. So these are sexual kinds of behaviors. But what you see is that they're much less common than gender harassment. So the garden variety is something that's gender harassment.
And one way that we're seeing institutions, not only universities, but organizations across the board combat this issue is implementing training sessions in order to educate their employees on how to properly handle or prevent sexual harassment in the workplace. What are we seeing with these trainings? And based on the report that you just completed, do we have any takeaways on how we can educate ourselves other than trainings?
Training is something that means different things for different institutions. Sometimes it's something that has more of an educational focus to tell people, well, what is sexual harassment? What do you do about it if you think you've been sexually harassed or you report to? Those kinds of things are important kinds of things for people to know. When we look at the evidence from the research literature with regard to the effectiveness of training in reducing sexual harassment, what we see is something that's pretty dismal. And there's really not evidence that suggests that training is having some sort of impact on sexual harassment. Now, one of the ironic kinds of reasons why this is so, and this is something that's borne out in our report, is that training is something that has this sort of legal sort of angle to it. If you are an institution and you have been sued for sexual harassment by one of your employees, or if an academic institution, one of your students, one of the things that you can point to is an affirmative defense that you've taken steps to try to do something about sexual harassment, something that's really protective of you in a lawsuit, is to say that you've had training. But oddly enough, one of the things that you don't have to prove is that the training did anything or made any difference with regard to the people who participated. And we know that training actually sometimes can have a negative effect on people who go through it. There's kind of a backlash. That's particularly when people who go through the training can see, and sometimes it's very obvious, that the training is something that really doesn't make a lot of sense. They don't think it is something that has any impact on people. So there's actually sometimes a backlash. One of the things as I said, is not required of people for this to be an affirmative defense, is to prove that the training did anything. This is something that has had this really negative effect, not only on academic institutions, but on businesses as well. They don't want to evaluate the training that is being done, because if they have some training and they evaluate it and they find, oh, it didn't do anything, then they are legally culpable again because they've done some sort of ineffective kind of training. So you see the idea of evaluations of training that's kind of focused on the training are periodic sorts of surveys that might tell you whether or not sexual harassment's going up or going down. Those are things that institutions are basically discouraged from doing because of the idea that showing merely that you did training is an affirmative defense.
ISU Professor John Pryor helped author a new national report on sexual harassment in the sciences and academia. He spoke with GLT's Mary Cullen. Pryor says to prevent one person from having too much power, he suggests using committee structures instead. It's Sound Ideas on GLT.